Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Oh, 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 for the longest time. Oh,
did you know that Billy Joel
Billy, did you just call him Billy Joel?
Billy Joel. Well, Billy it is Joel. It's not like Noel. Well, did you know that Billy Joel I think he lost his money like 3 times.
Did he? Why?
Lost all his cash 3 times. Because I was doing a bit of research on him, because I'm really interested in his career, because he's such a, you know,
I just marvel at the fact that I just randomly come out into a song and then next minute you know stuff about something random. Yeah, like I would never have expected. Anyway, there you go.
She's just shouted in from the sound room. You've said that before.
Yeah, I know.
Well, dreadfully sorry.
We're saying it again because it's fucking true.
Well, it was an Elvis situation, you know. That everything was taken from him a few times, from his wife, from his producer. Bad contracts ripped him off and da 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 da.
Do you like Elvis?
Do I like Elvis? Yeah, I mean, Elvis was a very iconic, you know. He was
my dad, my uncle, my brother, my nephew.
And Elvis. He was a good looking lad. He was mad at pretty.
Yeah.
He was a good looking fella, you know. Sad story there, but good looking fella.
Yeah.
Anyway,
for the longest time. You don't like me singing?
No, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. It hurts my ears.
Okay, talk to me. What are we talking about today? What do we want to cover?
I think we wanted to talk about...
Yes, I remember.
Well, a bit on setting realistic goals, especially at this time in life, that I want to give people some tips about how to set them, how to make them achievable. I'm going home tonight to do some goals with my own kids. How to set them, how to make them achievable, how to wire your kids to do it, and why people set goals and forget goals and never do it. You know, they have a set and forget policy. I'm going to do this and then they forget about it and, you know, they go through their lives being gunners.
Well, they have no plan. It's like, I want to do this, but nobody, you have no plan as to how to get there.
Yeah.
And you talk about vision, visionary a lot. Do you want to start with that in terms of the difference?
I think that the whole vision, visionary concept is tied into goals, etc., but it's all tied into one thing. And so a person, the difference between a vision, we did a podcast on this not so long ago, a live on this not so long ago. And I started pushing the concept around about Christmas time, STP in Perth, I think it was. No, it wasn't. It was STP the middle of last year in Melbourne. And I started talking about the concept of vision and visionaries. And so a vision is, everybody has a vision. People, you know, in some ways, you know, you're born into your vision. You know what your vision is when you turn up here. But in other ways, your vision comes to you. It's like, you know, I remember turning up to a Michael Domenico Rowland seminar and watching him come out on stage and talk about metaphysics. And I was like, oh, that's what I'm here to do. You know, I knew, oh my God, all the pennies dropped. You know, the reason why I questioned things all the way through my life, the reason why I, you know, I never saw things the way everybody else saw things was because I just wanted this deeper knowing of metaphysically and mystically how the universe works. I had this deep mystical desire to understand things. So I think that when people, when I saw him, it was like, da-da, I knew why I was here. But everybody has it in different ways. Yours was when you were standing with a toilet bowl around your neck. You were looking up to the steeple.
I was looking at the church. Yeah, it wasn't a toilet. It was a toilet bowl collar. The Mercedes College. We had Peter Pan collar. It looked like a toilet seat around your neck. It was white with the green on top of a green uniform.
Yeah,
and I was wearing that uniform, and I was standing in the outside the hall at the school, and you could see the top of the cathedral, St. Mary's Cathedral here in Perth. And I remember going, oh, I am the way I am because I'm meant to help people, you know. But I also got – I've just realised now that it was actually in high school as well when I was on the debating team that I could stand and talk to people.
Right.
But sometimes with the debates I didn't really know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand
the topic. Sounds like a podcast.
I didn't really know what I was talking about. It didn't know like the content enough. And I thought, podcast. If I know my content really well, then I can stand up and talk to people, right?
Yeah.
So, and that, because I loved doing it. I loved being up and standing there.
The truth about it is I never really feel I know my content well. And I think that, I think that that's, yeah, I think
we always can know better.
I think that that's important because that gives me this hunger to want to understand things better.
But just, but going on that, I know that we're going off topic a bit, but I think that we don't know it. We don't know it as well as we could because there's always more to learn.
Yeah.
Right. But people always say, how can you go up and stand on stage and talk? And I go, because I know what I'm talking about and I love what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, like, if you asked me to stand on stage and talk about motorbikes, well, good luck to you because it wouldn't happen. But because it's what inspires me and what lights me up and what makes me, like, this is my thing.
I think a great speaker, what defines a really great speaker or artist or singer is that they always feel as if they haven't quite got it right.
Perfect.
Does that make sense? It's not quite perfect. That's how you really know. A great, you know, I remember watching the movie Amy about Amy Winehouse, and she was with one of the classic American blues singers, was doing a song with her, and he was interviewed later and said, you know, she was in the box and she was singing, and she came out going, no, we have to do it again. She kept coming out going, no, we have to do it again. And he said, that's how you know a genius at what they do is because they never quite feel they've got it right.
Yeah.
And that's important. It's important to embrace that part of ourselves that always feels that we haven't quite got it right. But you can't allow that to stop you from doing what it is you want to do. Yeah. You have to understand that that's part of the journey is to feel as if you've never quite got it right.
Yeah.
You know, because the day you feel you got it right... that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's over. It's done. So I think that that's important. But...
Getting back onto the topic.
Back onto setting goals. I think that everybody has a vision for their lives. And I think it's important for people, even if they're listening to this, to stop and think about your moment. When was your moment when you knew what you were here to do? Of course, you're asked as a kid, you know, what do you want to do when you get older? Which is the fucking worst thing you can ask a kid when they're young because they don't know what they want to do, but they know what they want to have.
Yeah.
You know, so I talk to my kids about what they want to have. You know, I do it as often as I can. When I'm at night time and I'm putting them down to sleep and their brains are starting to get out of beta into alpha and theta where they create their reality and where they dream. And so I think that that everybody has an epiphany point throughout their lives. And it's important to stop and contemplate, what was your moment? What was your epiphany? When did you know what you are here to do? When did you know or find your superpower? You know, your when did that come to you? When was it revealed to you? And be aware of that and talk about it. And don't be afraid to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's not as big. It doesn't have to be this big fireworks moment. Sometimes it's just a little, oh. Like that's how mine was. It was a, oh.
Yeah.
I'm this way because I meant to help people. And then it wasn't until a few years later I went, oh.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here to do. I don't know how that's going to materialize in the outside world, but that's what I'm here to do, you know?
Yeah, I think, I was just walking across the road with one of John, the producers here a minute ago, John, and John was talking about, you know, music and you know, you can tell that John has had a moment. There's been a moment when he's had that, I know what I'm here to do. That's why he loves it, you know?
Yeah. So let's just go back. So we're talking about vision.
Yeah, I'm right, getting there.
You're getting, okay. Okay. Jesus. Okay. That's all right. Down, well, I know down. Where, I know you
we
got to
get 20 minutes out of this frigging thing.
We're going to do more than 20 minutes. Shit. We talk like anything. Go. Oh,
God. Okay. So the next thing that tends to happen though is that, you know, the minute you get your epiphany and what it is you're here to do, right, and you start to tell people, what happens is because we live in a polarized reality, in a dualistic reality, when we publicly announce our epiphany or our vision for our lives to the world, we do it and attached to it, is a plus, an infatuation, and it's public.
If I get this, it's going to be good, happy, pleasure.
Yes, so it's a plus, it's an infatuation, and it's... it is a plus infatuation and it's public. Now, the minute we have a plus infatuation about our future and we make it public, did you just fucking
just
yawn? Are you shitting me?
No, I wasn't bored. I just yawned.
Wait, well, I'm and just I was keeping just, you up.
I was just looking at John to go, I hope that didn't come across and no, now worry. You've
if
made
I
it public.
That, if I see that shit happening, I'll be letting people know. So you have a plus infatuation and it's public. The minute you do this, you simultaneously create a minus resentment and it's private. Mm-hmm. And the resentment is private, so it's internal. It's a resentment because you feel as if you're not there.
At
the place that you're publicly announcing to the world. Hey, mom, I know I'm going to be a singer. Hey, dad, I know that I'm going to be a plumber. Yeah. Hey, world, I know I'm going to be a producer. Whatever, I'm going to be an actor. When you publicly announce that to the world, you create simultaneously internally a private resentment because you're not there. So your public infatuations are always balanced out by a private resentment. And so this creates a conflict. Make sense?
Yep.
You're now conflicted. Because you know that sometime in the future, that's where you want to be, but you're not there now. So when you have a private resentment, you will beat yourself up. You will slam yourself. You will ridicule yourself. You will put yourself down because you're not there. Mm. Make sense? So that's what a vision is. Now, people then, when that happens, you'll become afraid of your vision. You'll become ashamed of it. You then, if you keep saying it to the world and you're not getting there, people will feel as if you're fraudulent. Then people stop believing in you and you feel that people are believing you and you're relying on people to believe in your lopsided view of your future without also, you know, talking about the private part of yourself, which feels as if you're not there. Does that make sense? Because we don't want to talk. We're encouraged to only talk about the plus and not the minus. But in actual fact, the wisdom is found when we actually do both. Mm. So when you have this public announcement of what it is you want to do to the world, but you're not there, you subconsciously ridicule yourself, beat yourself up and put yourself down because you're not there.
Because you're not there.
But that ridicule is important. And that ridicule turns up inside of you because it's trying to get you to turn your vision in and become a visionary.
Right.
Makes sense? And so I wanted to explain what a visionary is, but were you going
to
say something?
No. That's what the point I was kind of coming around to. So
a visionary is a person now that has that place that they want to get to and takes the time to stop and reverse engineer what are the things that they need to do in order to get there. So that what that means is that if you don't reverse engineer it, then every morning a person gets out of bed, no matter what sort of the bed they get out of, that ridicule is still there. And every morning they will subconsciously beat themselves up, ridicule themselves, sabotage their lives because they're not there.
So just so that we can clarify, right? Someone who's got a vision has the vision. They've got, I want to be on stage. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a dancer.
Sing and dance and dance and sing.
They want to be this. And they've got these pluses attached, but then subconsciously they've got the minuses and they beat themselves up for not having achieved this, right?
Yeah.
Because all it is like an image in their minds. It's not anything that they perceive that they can, they haven't created a plan to get there.
Yes.
That's what a vision is.
Yeah.
So with a vision, when someone's got a vision, they've got the image, but they have they've got an image, but no plan to get to that point. What you're talking about is to shift that and to have that as a goal and to become a visionary, it's no point just having the vision. You've got to have the vision, but you also got to have a step-by-step plan to get there, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about, reverse engineering. In terms of if I want to get to this point, then these are all the things I need to do in order to be able to get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So people who are visionaries.
And when you get there, you don't have that when you've got the plan, you're not beating yourself up all of the time because you know you're on the way.
Yes.
Right, got it, go.
So people who have the vision for their lives and reverse engineer it, they go from a vision to a visionary.
Yeah.
Make sense? So what that does is it eradicates and eliminates any conflict.
Yes.
It also eliminates any need for outer support.
So tell me about, what do you mean by the conflict?
So the conflict is because you have reversed engineered right down to where you're sitting listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah.
You know that listening to this podcast is part of you achieving your vision.
Yeah.
Make sense? You know that when you switch it off, whatever you do next, no matter what step you take, it's always on the way to achieving the vision.
Because you've got the plan.
Because you've got the plan.
So the conflict is, so when you're in vision mode, you're in conflict because you don't know whether the thing you're doing next is going to get you to the outcome.
Yes.
When you're in visionary mode, it eliminates the conflict because you've got the plan. It takes away the fact that you're beating yourself up challenge yourself yeah. because you're just getting in and doing what you need to do in order to get to that outcome.
So then think about the, so if every human being has a vision for their lives, right? And so this is why people get afraid of their visions, right? They don't tell people about it, right? Because they're afraid of the ridicule that they'll feel on the inside for not doing it.
Yes.
When you're young, you have a small vision, you tell people, but you don't get there. And what happens is you realize, you know, when I told people this stuff, I beat myself up about it. So therefore you will pull back on your vision as you get older. But what I felt, when we work with people who are visionaries, well, I'll put it to you this way. When you're working with people and you get them to talk about, you know, they uncover what it is they're here to do, right? And they see it and then they feel it and then their mind is blown and they're like, holy fuck, you know, this is huge. That's what frightens people the most, is that their vision is so big, because people come to us and go, oh, I don't know why I'm here and I'm lost and I don't know what my purpose is.
That's not
true. Everybody knows what their purpose is. It's not that they don't know what their purpose is. It's that they don't know how the fuck it is they're going to get there.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So when you encourage a person's vision and you get them to reverse engineer it, you turn them into a visionary.
Yes.
So therefore it eliminates the conflict. But think about the amount of people in the world that don't understand that concept. You know, and a visionary is a human being that has a destination and has worked out how every step in their life is on the way to getting there. It's not in the way, it's on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And no matter what occurs, it's on the way. They know that challenges are going to come up. They need them. They invite the challenges. They need them because they know they need to get over the challenge to get there. But therefore, think about the amount of people in the world that give up on their vision, you know, that give up on what it is they're here to do because they feel as if or nobody's told them that it's possible. They just have to work out what the next series of steps are.
So what I find with, what we find with a lot of the people that we work with, the biggest thing that gets in people's way of them achieving anything is how emotional they are.
Yeah.
So they become emotional because they're not clear about the path that they're going to take, yeah. right? So the conflict and the emotion are all the same thing. It's just like, I don't know if this turn, it's like getting into, we live in Perth, right? So we're based here in Perth. Imagine if we were going to get in our car and we were going to drive to Mandurah.
Yeah.
And as we're in the car, we kind of get that we've got to go south, but we actually don't know if the road that we're taking is going to get us to where we're going to go, where we want to go, the destination that we want to get to.
Yeah.
So every time we're in the car and every time we're on the road, right,
yeah.
we feel like, okay, if I take the right turn, do I take the left turn? Do I go straight for a bit? And so there's all these questions, and these questions that we have make us emotional.
Yeah.
When we're emotional, we can't keep our focus on the destination.
And on top of that, we distort the fabric of space and time. So when we're emotional, our goals feel much further away from
us. Absolutely. This is a really important point.
But when we're certain, we know that no matter what step we're taking, it's getting closer and closer to us.
Yes. And so therefore, if we were to put it into a GPS and say, well, this is the destination I want to reach to, the GPS reverse engineers it and says, yeah. well, you're starting here now. Yeah. So from here, you've got to drive straight for 5 kilometres, then you turn left and you go straight for another 2 kilometres, then you turn right, et cetera, et cetera. And then because the plan is laid out, we don't get emotional.
Yeah.
We know that the destination is set. We know, and even if we take a wrong turn, it doesn't matter because we're guided back to going back to the place that we need to get to, right? Yeah. So this is the whole idea, this is the whole concept of a visionary, is that they not only have the outcome, they don't just have the steps, but therefore the emotion that they need to take every single day in order to get to the outcome they want is irrelevant because it's just a part of the process of getting from A to B.
And then the other thing
is using the system to get them to there.
So therefore the other thing is that when you have a vision for your life and you know every step you're taking is getting you there, the time in which you get there speeds up. Does that make sense? So you're not emotional because you know that every day you're getting closer, and it's getting you're getting closer to it, and it's getting closer to you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. You get more green lights than you do red lights.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's not a lot of ambers, but you get more green lights than you do red lights because you know what you're looking out for. You know what the next green light is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? When you sit into a car and you're told, you know, you got to go to Muckambooden or Parabadoo, and you've no UBD or you've no GPS, you you know, you get into the car and you shit yourself, you know, because you're scary. You're like, how am I going to get there? How am I going to hit a roux? How long is it going to take? Is there petrol stations along the way? Is there roadhouses? Am I going to be hungry? What if I break down? Where if you reverse engineer it and are you, and you pop it into a GPS and you see the map, when you press start your car and you see the map and it's on the GPS, what do you feel?
Well, you don't feel emotional. You feel excited, inspired.
Yep.
Ready to rock and roll.
Yep. And you feel it's actually something you're going to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You feel it's a journey that you're on the way to, and you feel actually grateful that you're going there and you have everything that you need
in order to get to that outcome. And so I think that, you know, people, when they don't have a goal like that and they have, or they haven't reverse engineered it, they, everything that they do is a question. So, and then they get emotional about it. Do you know what I mean? But it should be like brushing your teeth. Like you get up and go to work.
Yeah.
You get up, you brush your teeth, you have a shower. You don't go, oh, this is good. Should I be doing this? Should I not be doing this? It's just a part of what happens. Does that make sense? Because you know that those steps are going to take you along the way. So if you've got a goal and you know that certain steps are going to get you there, and you've got to do those certain things every day or these certain concepts, you know, two or three times a week in order to get you there, well, then it doesn't become emotional. It's just something that you need to do, and it becomes something that inspires you rather than something that you question or that you are you're bogged down by, you know. I often use the analogy I often use the analogy of cooking for me, right? Because as you know, I can't. I'm literally the worst cook in the world. And your wife, who's pretty bad, loves hanging out with me because she feels that at least she's better than someone. And my people ask me, well, you're Italian, didn't you learn? Oh, my mum used to be like, you just put a bit of this and I put a bit of that and then you taste it. I'm like,
What does that even mean?
Like, how do I do that? And then just recently I asked you to help me because I'd seen some recipes and stuff. People say put all this in. I know, but what order and how much doesn't I don't know. I don't understand that. So it doesn't come naturally to me. So I delegate that off to you.
But there's something in that, right? That, you know, when you set a vision and you become a visionary about that vision and then you go and you achieve that vision, right? It's like there are certain tags that you pick up along the way emotionally that tells you you're on track, right?
Yeah.
So when your mom is saying to you, you know, here's how you get there, here's how you create it, try a bit of this and a bit of that, it's because she's cooked it before and she's done it so many times that it just naturally happens. So if you're able, once you do it once and then you do it again, your visions for your life are come closer to you quicker.
Yes.
Because you know emotionally what this emotional signatures are of when you're achieving
when
things.
When you're on track,
Does that make sense?
So for me, like, so the analogy we use is that, you know, the whole recipe idea. Because if you want to, like, I could never cook as in cooking food, like as in savoury stuff. I could do baking. So I used to make cakes a lot. When I was much, much younger, my brother used to love a chocolate mousse cake that I made. But if I didn't have a recipe, right, and have – if I was trying to get to the outcome, and this is a, just a good analogy for people, I suppose, is that you're trying to get to an outcome and you know the outcome is the chocolate mousse cake, right? And you know that you've got to have certain ingredients and you know you've got to have flour, you know you've got to have eggs, cream, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't know when to put them in, how to put them in, how hot the oven needs to be, how long you've got to let the mousse set, and what tools you need to actually get to that outcome. You're just emotional. You're never going to get to that outcome. It's like it's almost impossible if you've got no concept and you've never been there before, right? So for having the recipe for me is like, okay, I don't have any emotion then. I'm not like I'm sad about using these two eggs. It's like, no, it takes two eggs. I just put two eggs in, right? I've got to beat it for this amount of time. I've got to whisk it. I've got to put this much sugar, this much cream, whatever I need to put in. And then I know when to set it, how long it needs to go in the oven, how to, whatever. I've got a recipe. The visionary, technically, that's all it is. That's all they've got. They've got a recipe. And in them having the recipe.
I reckon you'd be fucking dangerous with a recipe.
No, I'm actually not bad. Well, yeah.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. Well, you tasted a soup I made the other day.
Oh, yeah, that was actually
nice. And I make pump. I use the Thermomix is pretty much a godsend for me, I just have to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, well, it shouldn't be called Thermomix. It should be called cheat.
No, it's not a cheat. I can do lots of things in the Thermomix. Anyway, my point is the analogy we're trying to make here, rather than just having a go at my cooking or skills or lack thereof, is the fact that being a visionary is akin to having a recipe. It's like saying this is the plan you're going to take to get there. Somebody else has either paved that way for you, or you can create it yourself. And it doesn't mean you can't go off track.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't veer off track every now and then. But it means that for the most part,
you know how
to get from A to B. And that's the and so we've been speaking to a lot of people lately as well. And I think the other beauty of what we're talking about here that I like is that being a visionary is one thing in the sense that you've got a plan to get there, but a lot of people have been talking to us, and it's something that I they've been really reaffirming what I realized at the beginning of the year and at the end of last year when I was creating my goals for this year, that the goal setting concept, while it's good to have those big goals, right, it's super important to chunk it down, and it's super important to have small goals, because the big goals, you never feel like you're getting there. If you have small goals and you chunk it down, or milestones, what you're doing is you're working towards those. And when you're working towards those, you get a sense of achievement, because the whole idea of the visionary is that if you want to have, let's say the outcome is that you want to be successful, or you want to get a promotion or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And to get to that promotion or to get to that outcome, you know that when you get to that outcome, you're going to feel certain things. So let's say you're going to feel successful, you're going to feel free, right? And because you don't have a plan, every single day you're feeling failure and you're feeling stuck, which is the opposite of the success and free you're trying to achieve,
right?
So if you want to get to a point of feeling successful and free, you can't be doing that by accessing the emotions of failure and stuckness all of the time.
Yeah.
So having the little goals along the way and having the plan along the way helps you to feel that for today, am I successful? Yeah. Did I get to feel free? Did I, et cetera, et cetera. So you start to access the emotions and the concept of what you want to be when the outcome arrives, and you're accessing those every single day.
It's funny you should say that, because in 2010 we attempted to climb Mirror Peak, right?
Do you know what? It's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah. I was 37 years old and
just a baby. Lexi was literally just born. She was 6 months old because Andrew's in Bali. Yeah. And parts of the way along that trip, I was like, oh, can somebody just transport me to Bali with Lexi and Ange? It was full on, wasn't it?
It was crazy. Yeah. But I remember when we were heading to summit that mountain, right? We couldn't see the summit. So the summit was so high that we couldn't see the summit, right? And as we went and, you know, we every day, so it was, I think it was 17 days in, was it?
Probably not. I think it might have been 17 days in total.
In total. So it's.
But the last, like, it only takes 2 days to get back.
Yeah.
It took all the time to
but
get there.
But it's more dangerous getting back than it is going in.
Full on.
And I remember there was a certain point where you reach a certain altitude, and we got to 4,900 meters, right? Mm. And we walked, I remember, I was suffering from AMS, which is acute mountain sickness, and I was literally dragged in, carried in, and I was...
I remember you were really sick on the way to that
really
place.
Sick, and I was put into a tent, and they were like, no, we're going to have to take him down the mountain, he's too sick. And I remember I came out the next morning, they brought in some Buddhists, they prayed over me, and then fed me soup, garlic and onion soup. And I came out the next morning and I was fine. And I remember my brother coming over to me, because he was heading up the trip, Clint. And he came over to me and he said to me, oh, this is the first time, you know, every day we were step by step by step, and treacherous. And people, you know, look, Mirror Peak, so just so people understand, climbing into base camp is a well-worn climb. you know, all the safety precautions are there. It's a well-worn climb. Climbing into Mirror Peak, there's only about 100 people climb into it every year. And it's the second, it's the highest trekkable climb in the world. And it's semi-technical. But when you're heading in there, it's not a well-worn path. There were places we crossed and covered that like any of us could have died at any moment in time. And I remember when we got into that camp and I get out of the tent the next morning and my brother comes over, he's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I actually feel really good. I remember, because we'd acclimatized, and I remember him saying, oh, come on over here and I'll show you the peak. And when we walked over there and he pointed up at the peak and I was literally having to look up, you know, vertically, nearly 80 degrees. And I'm looking up and the minute I saw the peak was the minute, you know, literally I thought, how the hell are we going to do that? Like, how on earth are we going to do that? Mm. And he looked at me and he said to me, now that you've seen it, don't look at it again. All you got to do is focus on the step by steps, the steps. So then that day we were heading up onto a glacier and then we had to get off the other side of the glacier and we had to camp at over 5,400 meters.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I'd already been sent back by that point.
You'd been sent back, yeah.
I was hallucinating.
You had hallucinations and AMS as well. But I remembered that was really when it became difficult. Once I'd seen the peak, it became difficult. Even though
it was so close at that place when we were there, it was so close to us because it was just close, but it was also just ginormous, like the concept, because we were at, what were we, 4.9?
4.9,
about, because that was the last place I was at. I didn't go to the next place. So at that place, it was very overwhelming to see it, wasn't it?
It was terrifying. And I think that, you know, if I had kept my eye on the summit, I don't think I would have made it.
Yeah.
He said, don't look at the summit again. Don't worry about the summit. You'll worry about the summit when you're there.
Yeah.
But be aware that that's where you're heading. And I think it's same with these goals. Don't worry about, you know, don't worry about what it looks like to get there. Be aware of what it is, but put your energy into the next step, the next step, the next step, the next
100%.
Step. And then I remember, it's like nature sets it up, you know, because you have to watch every step you take because you can fall at any moment.
Yeah.
Like Sherpas fall off the side of that mountain all the time and die. You know, they just fall off and disappear. And when you're on a glacier, you can fall through a crevasse and they can never get you. You know, you're gone. That's it. Your body has to be left there and you're frozen in time and ice forever. Well, until it melts. There's a melt of some sort. But I think the point is know your step by step and keep going step by step.
Mm, yeah. I think that's a good analogy. I think that's good. Is there anything else you want to cover?
No.
So basically, vision.
Visionary.
Emotion.
Yeah.
Visionary, no emotion. Yep. You just get in and you have a plan. You've got a recipe. Mm-hmm. You follow that. And then when you're doing that, you'll be able to access the emotions you need so that you can get to that outcome. But you don't get frightened by this big outcome because you're just working step by step.
Yeah.
So small chunks along the way.
Yep.
Awesome.
Cool.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.